Blog Talk Radio.
Pen. I'm Coach Pen.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Third and Long with Coach Penn. Today is February 4th and it has been over a month since you've last heard from me. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, and let me first tell you that this is not a live show. Right now, I am on the football field at Downey High School having a 7-on-7 scrimmage with the SoCal Breakers. So the Quake and Breakers tonight are having a 7-on-7 scrimmage, and I am there, so I had to record this earlier today, but I didn't want you guys to miss out. So here it is, and it's been a while, so let me first say hey to everybody, and I've missed you just as much as you've missed me, believe me. One of the reasons I'd scheduled it for tonight was because all of January we had practice Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, plus we had some events on Saturdays. So it was basically our hell month for our players. We basically just busted their butts, tried to teach them the basics and the techniques of every position and get everybody, you know, fundamentally sound. In February, we basically got rid of the Wednesday practices and added 45 minutes to the Tuesday and Thursday practices, along with our six-hour Saturday practices. So it was supposed to be a free night for me, but Coach Manny is the head coach of the SoCal Breakers, decided to hook up together and give our ladies some extra competition, some extra work, because there's no work like that you can get from another team. Plus, you can have people, you know, work multiple positions, and we're just going to do flag tonight. There'll be no helmets, no pads, no nothing, so it'll be nice and relaxed, and I hope that everybody else out there is doing the same and, you know, using the location advantage. I mean, we have the Amazons and the Breakers pretty close to us. The Amazons just started practice from what I heard, so I don't think they're ready. But, I mean, the Breakers have mentioned that they've only done a couple practices too, but they just need to do some things to find some things out, see who can catch, see who grasps what is involved, and see basically an initial evaluation. On February 18th, we will also be doing that again. So I look forward to that one being a little bit more productive because we basically just started teaching plays. As I said, the month of January was for basic technique and fundamentals. So let me give you a brief rundown of what this show has covered, and I appreciate all you listening. Sorry about the chat board and not being able to call in tonight. You can chat with the people that are in there, but I will not be online. I will be at practice. So some of the things we were going to discuss, it was posted on the WFB Talk blog a couple weeks ago. So we are going to talk about the schedules of the IWFL and WFA, two different types of offense, the spread offense, which you see prevalent in college football. Also, you see a little bit of the wildcat formation, as it's called in the NFL now. We're going to talk about the NCAA bowl game, since it's been since I've talked, and we're going to recap the Super Bowl, and we're going to start with the Super Bowl, which is funny because it just happened, so we're going to start with the Super Bowl. It's fresh on my mind. I predicted that the Giants and Steelers will be there, but I predicted they'll be there if BJ is healthy, BJ as in Brandon Jacobs. Brandon Jacobs did not get the ball very much in the game they lost, and I was quite surprised at how poorly the Giants played. With that being said, I was very happy that the Cardinals were there and that the Super Bowl was a very good show. We had a little Super Bowl party in my house and enjoyed the game, and it was a great game. I think last year had a little bit more in it because it was 18-0 versus the Giants. This year was basically somebody that truly didn't belong there, as in the Cardinals, who were 9-7. They didn't even reach double digits. And then, of course, the Steelers, who are the Steelers, going for their second title in 3 years or 4 years, something like that. So it was a very well-played game, with Pittsburgh basically dominating the first half and then Arizona trying to close it up right before halftime, and wow, that 100-yard interception return by a defensive end slash linebacker, James Harrison, the defensive player of the year. It was just a great run, great effort, and that basically won them the game to me. I mean, I know there was that big drive at the end where Arizona scored too quickly on that deep pass from Warner to Fitzgerald, and that was hilarious because I'll tell you what I said in a second. And then, you know, Ben just drove him right down the field, throwing it to Santonio Holmes the whole time, and Santonio made a great catch with 2 feet in. I don't even think it was 2 feet. It was two toes. So that was just amazing. But that just game-changing play right before halftime, I mean, it should have went in tied. Instead, it went in 17-3, and that was just huge. Or was it 17-7? I can't remember. I'm just amazed at, like, oh, great, they just lost the game. They had a chance to really take the momentum into halftime and prove that they belong, and that just was disheartening. They never gave up. They kept on coming back, and because they kept on within two touchdowns, I was like, oh, man, Pittsburgh's in trouble. If they keep them within two touchdowns, they can score quickly. And it's funny, we were all talking about the game, and a couple of my coaches were at my house, and I was like, if I tell you to tackle somebody at the line of scrimmage, you tackle them. And they're like, why are you saying that? And I was like, well, because right now, if I'm the defensive coach or basically head coach, I'm telling you, tackle Larry Fitzgerald at the line of scrimmage. Make the other people beat you. Make Kurt Warner find somebody else. And what do? They let him off the line of scrimmage, and boom. Huge touchdown, first play. I was just amazed. And they're like, I guess Josh was right. Tackle him at the line of scrimmage. He can't catch the ball. And it was just horrible coverage. And I had a couple DBs at my house, and they were like, oh, man. Yeah, it was just some bad angles and everything, and Larry Fitzgerald was gone. He proved that he was a big-game receiver, broke Jerry Rice's record for most touchdowns in a playoff series. So that was pretty amazing. It was just an overall great game. Congratulations to the Pittsburgh Steelers and my girlfriend, who's from Pittsburgh, and all those Pittsburgh fans. I wouldn't say they deserved it, but they earned it, that's for sure. That was a hard-fought game against two really good teams, and my Dolphins got killed by Arizona earlier in the year. So I knew they were a good team, but they were just so inconsistent. And luckily it was a good weather game where weather didn't affect. And I think eventually the NFL really needs to take it into consideration. They need to have some Super Bowls in the cold. You know, because it doesn't have to be pretty. Maybe the corporate suits that get all the free tickets will not go and real fans can attend the Super Bowl. Even though when Pittsburgh's there, there seems to be a lot more real fans than normal Super Bowls. Because whenever the Patriots make the Super Bowl, Super Bowls are boring in the stands. But, I mean, you could tell that place was loud when Pittsburgh was on defense or when Pittsburgh did something good. And that means real fans were there. So that was pretty cool. That was my recap for the Super Bowl. Once again, just a reminder, you're third along with Coach Penn, pre-recorded because right now I'm at practice doing a 7-on-7 with the Breakers. Next, I have the bowl games. The bowl game season. Now, I know that seems like a long time ago, but even longer ago, after I went to the Florida-Florida State game, I mentioned to everybody that whoever plays Florida for the national championship is going to lose. I was right. Florida was that good. And in my poll, Florida finished out the year number one. Now, I know a lot of people, including some of my friends who are Texas fans, will say, well, Texas beat Oklahoma by 10 as well. Yes, they did, and a lot of people say USC probably should have been considered. First of all, USC lost to an unranked opponent, so I don't even consider them. And the way they lost was just, you know, they were supposed to have the best defense in the country, and they let a 5'6" running back just run all over them, and I was just not impressed with how inconsistent they were. They have the best talent every single year for probably the last 6 or 7 years, and they always manage to blow one game. The only year they didn't blow a game was the 2005 year where Vince Young just beat them single-handedly, and I mean their defense just couldn't stop Vince Young, and that was no slight to their defense or their personnel. That was just an incredible performance by one man. But every other year, they seem to lose to an overmatched opponent. And I'm sorry, you can't do that and expect to throw yourself in there for number one. Who was it? Florida lost to Ole Miss on a blocked extra point. Ole Miss crushed Texas Tech. Texas Tech beat Texas. Texas beat Oklahoma. So my rankings, top three, go Florida, Texas, USC. So there were some really good teams this year, really good games. Some of the bowl games that stuck out in my mind that were kind of surprising to me. I cannot believe BYU lost to Arizona. That was a total shock. I did not expect that. BYU, I expected to do something. The Pac-10 really represented themselves well in the five bowl games they were in. They went 5-0. I will say they played a lesser opponent with the exception of the BYU game. Arizona was the lesser opponent in the BYU game, and they dominated BYU the whole game. I was very impressed by that performance by Mike Stoops and his crew. The Poinsettia Bowl, Boise State and TCU. I actually called this one. I knew that Boise State was not going to go undefeated. TCU's defense was too good. They were one of the few people who could slow down Oklahoma's offense, and they managed to pull it out by 1 point, and it was a very, very good game. I got to mention my Noles because I'm a Noles person, you know. Florida State just obliterated Wisconsin, and it proves that the Big Ten is just a joke. Because Florida State, while they probably were the best team in the ACC, they didn't play it every week, so they were considered the third best team. Well, they just demolished Wisconsin, and something has to be done about the Big Ten. They need to learn how to recruit speed, because all they do is grab the biggest, fattest people they can grab and say, we're going to pound the ball. And then as soon as they play somebody with any type of speed, they get humiliated. So I just don't understand the Big Ten, and they're sticking to the tradition. But we'll get to that later in our spread offense and cloud of dust segment. Let me go on. The Missouri-Northwestern game was very exciting. Missouri just played like they didn't want to win, and then when they got to overtime, they were like, hey, you know what, maybe we should try and win this game. Now, I liked that game. That was pretty cool. I love to see overtime games, especially in college football, where it's, you know, the 25-yard line and in, because that's real football. I hate this NFL standard, and the IWFL recently switched their policy. They will no longer do sudden death overtime. They will go to, which is many considered, the Oklahoma style of overtime rules, where each team gets a chance at the ball and you keep playing until one team has more points than the other. The Maryland-Nevada game was also very exciting, 42-35, very, very good. Oregon-Oklahoma State was a surprise to me. I knew Oregon was good, but I didn't know they were that good, because Oklahoma State's defense was really good all year, and they dominated the first half, dominated. And then Oregon, I don't know what they did. They must have sat on something or really got yelled at, because they came out in the second half and just took charge. They basically didn't even let Oklahoma State get the ball or control it at all. Every time Oregon touched it, they scored. Probably the most boring game of all was the Oregon State-Pittsburgh game. 3-0. 3-0. Pittsburgh, Big East team, Big East, kind of like the Big Ten to me, except a little bit better. Dave Wannstedt, never been a fan of him because he just killed my Dolphins when they actually had talent. But Oregon State, missing their two best players, only managed 3 points. They lose, right? No. Pittsburgh, having all of their players, couldn't score a damn point. That is pathetic. And personally, I was astounded by that. I could not believe it. So I'm happy for Oregon State. I've always liked them, the Beavers. You know, it's a good mascot to have. So then Georgia Tech just got demolished by LSU, and that was a shock to me. They couldn't get anything going, and a lot has been said about how the two different coaches went about practicing for their bowl games, and one of them took it easy, one of them stepped it up a notch. It's all about how much importance do you put on the bowl games. I understand if you're playing for the big one or one of the BCS bowls, but this is a Chick-fil-A bowl. It was a, you know, New Year's Eve bowl. It was a pretty big one, but Georgia Tech just said, you know what, hey, everybody, this is a reward. We're not going to punish you by having extra practices. They cut down their practice time, and it showed. All right, so then we got the couple games on New Year's Day were really good. The Penn State-USC game was exciting. USC dominated the second and third quarters, not putting anything on the points in the third quarter, but the second quarter was just an explosion, and Penn State actually made it an exciting game in the fourth quarter, losing by 14, which is closer than most thought it would have been, probably not closer than the line or the spread, but closer than most thought it would have been. But I mean, I was impressed with Penn State. They got to what they should have been doing in the fourth quarter, and I was saying it the whole game. I was like, why aren't they doing this? And then as soon as they went into it, they started moving the ball and started scoring. So it was a good game. The Georgia-Michigan State was kind of boring to me. I mean, lots of field goals in the first half, and then finally people started waking up in the second half. Surprisingly, all the bowl games this year were very low scoring compared to previous years. Usually there's an abundance of scoring because people had all the time off. There's a lot of timing and tackling issues because, you know, a month off is just a long time. As I brought up before, Mississippi beat Texas Tech, and it was nowhere near as close as the score, which was 13 points difference, because Texas Tech scored 13 in the fourth. Mississippi dominated that game. It was pretty surprising. Utah, the good old Utes, have another undefeated season and get no respect for it. They finished number four in my poll. Probably I wanted to put them above Texas and USC, but I just couldn't just because of the conferences they play in. And now people can say that the WAC or Mountain West Conference really did a great job this year defeating who they played and the conference schedules and all that fun stuff. But, you know, they dominated Alabama, and I'll give them props for that. I just don't think they could have kept up with the speed of the other three teams. I just don't think they could have. The Monday game was Texas-Ohio State, which, once again, everybody's going to see if Texas had anything to play for and if Ohio State could save face by keeping it close. Well, it was close. Ohio State actually came back towards the fourth quarter and made it a close game. Texas didn't look like they were playing for much. It kind of looked like they were walking through the motions. It was kind of a surprise. I thought they would really put on a show and try and fight for a split national championship, one being with the BCS and one being with the AP. I don't recognize the AP one. I recognize the BCS because that's what the NCAA recognizes. It's great to get a trophy from somebody, but if it doesn't get recognized by the NCAA, then what's the point of even getting it? Lastly, we have the BCS championship game. I called it months prior, saying that Florida would win, and they made Oklahoma and Sam Bradford look stupid, look overrated, and looked like they had never played a defense, which they hadn't all year. The closest thing they came to playing a defense was TCU and Texas. TCU shut them out in the second half. I think they allowed a field goal, maybe if not that, because it was like 35-10 was the final score. And then when they played Texas, whenever they got stopped on a drive, you know, they got frustrated. Sam Bradford, the cross-eyed guy that he is, I won't say any, you know, derogatory things that I want to say, but he had to play people that could cover people. You know, Florida can match up athlete for athlete against all of that talent that he had, and then they could also get pressure. And he proved in the Texas game that if you get pressure on him, he's not a very good quarterback. He made a very smart decision in coming back for a senior year. I will give him that because he needs it. He needs that senior year to develop, especially since all of his offensive line is gone and most of his skill positions are gone. And I love the fact that the Florida coaches knew that without DeMarco Murray, they're going to be a totally different team. And yes, number 29, I believe his name was Brown, was a very good running back, but he was not DeMarco Murray. And that was a huge difference in the game because they could not get the running game going as much as they wanted to. And when they are usually looking down the field at wide open receivers and just have to throw touch passes, you know, he didn't know what to do because he had to put some on the mark. And he threw some good passes. Sam Bradford threw some really good passes. But it comes down to who wants it more and who you know, has faced the most adversity during the year, and that was most certainly Florida. A scoreless first quarter led to Florida basically taking charge and owning the rest of the game. They dominated the game on both sides of the ball, no matter what the score says. I know it was only 10 points, but it was a very well-played game, and I was very happy to see a good BCS championship game and to see Oklahoma lose because I am not an Oklahoma fan. Yes, I'm a Florida State fan, and I hate Florida, but I always root for Florida and Miami if they're not playing us because when we beat them, it makes us look better. So that was you know, my recap of the Bulls, and I mean, I like everybody knows, I'm a college football fanatic. That's my first sport that I love. Women's football would come in second, and then the NFL would come in third. So I usually watch the NFL for my Dolphins and then for my fantasy football. So that's the NCAA bowl games, which is funny because today is February 4th, and it is National Signing Day for the all high school recruits. They sign their national letters of intent to go to what school. So let me go ahead and break down that ranking for you right now. Right now on Decision Day 09, as Rivals.com is calling it, LSU has recruited the best class so far. They've got 26 commitments, with five of them being five stars. USC is second. Ohio State's third. Alabama's fourth. Texas is fifth. Florida State's sixth. Florida's 17th. And then some surprises. North Carolina is eighth. And Michigan is 10th. So that's pretty good. Even after bad years, Michigan is getting the recruits, so we'll see what Rich Rodriguez can do. So, I mean, there's still plenty of time, and there's lots of people still yet to sign and figure things out. I mean, LSU has 26, and North Carolina has 29 recruits. That's a lot of scholarships they had open. So, I mean, several teams, like Florida, doesn't have very many seniors leaving, so they don't have as much scholarships to give. I think Florida State only has, like, 23 scholarships to give, and they've already signed 21 people, so they can only get two more. Let's hope they're two good ones. So yeah, and once again, this is not a live show. I'm at practice right now, having a 7-on-7 with the Breakers. So keep chatting on the chat boards, but don't call in because there's nobody on the other line but BJ running the tape, basically running the tape, manning the chat boards, letting everybody know, talking some stuff, and maybe she'll send me the transcript later. So hope you can do that, BJ. Now let's go into my next topic, and this basically applies to all forms of football, whether it be women's football, college football, or the NFL. I mean, you can even include high school, but since high school is not a part of my show, I'm not going to. Sorry, I was a little bit parched. Spread offense versus the cloud of dust. I heard on a couple of radio shows recently people talking about spread offense versus cloud of dust. I was originally supposed to talk with Paul Johnson of Georgia Tech and Tony Sperano of the Dolphins. I nixed those because, you know, I just didn't want to get them on here and then have them talk about women's football if that was the case. I didn't want that there, because if they don't know about it, I don't want them going, well, that sounds neat. Well, how do they do this? You know, I really wanted to keep the thing focused, so here I am going to stay focused. Spread offense versus cloud of dust. Spread offense is basically an offense designed to spread the defense out. Basically put wide receivers all over the field, or running backs, have a quarterback in usually a shotgun formation of some sort, and throw quick passes or have lots of motion with quick runs. It's to get people out of position and make sure that everybody is, disciplined in their scheme, so you'd say. The cloud of dust is referred to is when people are in the I or pro formation with one or two tight ends, and they're just running it down your throat, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. A big pile of people moving a big pile, 3 yards, because 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards leaves you fourth and one. And if you can get 3 yards on every play, you're going to go for it every day on a fourth and one. I think that coaches that decide what type of offense they're going to run before they know what type of personnel they have are idiots. I don't think there is an advantage or disadvantage to either offense. It's all about the execution and the belief of your players in getting that. A lot of people said that Georgia Tech could not run the spread option attack in Division I football. Yeah, it worked for Navy, but Navy played lower-tier teams. And you know, there's an Air Force runs like a wishbone / option attack, and it works for them because they play lower tier teams. Every time they play a team that matters, they can't do it. Well, Georgia Tech proved that it can be run in Division I football. No matter how poorly they performed in the bowl game against LSU, they proved it. They could run on Miami. They could run on Florida State. predominantly two of the best defenses in college football over the history of the last 20 years. And they won games. You know, they did a really good job. Virginia Tech was the only one really successful at stopping their spread option attack. And I really don't agree with the blocking on those type of things, because all they do is aim for knees. You know, the offensive line dives at knees and tries to get people to do that, and they get off the ground real quick and then go to the next one. And I think that's cheap and dirty football. If it works for you, great. Great thing for me is in women's football, you're not allowed to do that. And either you're not allowed to do that in high school. So that's good for me, because I don't have to worry about that. Chop blocks and low blocks, those are all illegal in women's football. So I don't ever have to worry about my players and their knees getting taken out by cheap football. Whenever I watched the Florida State-Georgia Tech game, I was just like, this is such crap. All they do is snap the ball and dive at people's knees. I would be jumping up and landing right on top of them with my cleat right in the back of their neck. Just because, hey, if they want to do that, I'll just walk right over them. So that's type of a cloud of dust, you know, get in the eye, run it right up the middle, and see how far you can push it. If you can do that, I know a team that Sacramento Sirens are really good at that type of offense, but they have that type of personnel. So, I mean, if you have that type of personnel, then that's what you run. I know there's a couple other offenses in the women's football that run a cloud of dust, and if you're successful with it, great. Reading a couple years ago, they had lots of size, not very much athletic talent. They would line up, two tight ends. The spacing between the line would be nil. I mean, their feet were right next to each other. And then they'd have two wings, and they'd have a fullback and a quarterback, and they would just run that option attack right at you. Guaranteed, they didn't score a point until they played us. But the next year, I saw them, and they were trying to run a spread offense. Well, that was really a bad idea, because the spread offense, when you have a very big team, not very fast, is not going to work. And that's why I think it's stupid to design an offense without knowing who you're coming back. This is my fourth year with the Quake, and every single year I've had a different type of offense as my main offense, because I've come in with everything that I have, and then I design or pick the main offense based off what I see in tryouts in the first month of practice. We need to find out who we have and what we're capable of, what our strong suits are. The last 2 years, I've had a really fast running back who could get outside and just make people look stupid. So we basically went with not a spread offense, but my own version of a spread, where I basically let everybody come in the middle. We had 3-yard splits, and I dared everybody to blitz us. So I shotgun snap directly to our running back with another running back in the backfield, and I dared them to blitz up the middle. The only team that had any success stopping this was Sacramento, and that's because Sacramento is a very, very disciplined team. They didn't change their defense one bit based on our splits, and that was really smart of them. I mean, we still averaged about 5 yards a carry in total against them, but we were never able to sustain a drive. As soon as we got closer to the goal line, it was able to stop, because it's based on lots of open field. And when you shrink the field, like a passing team, when you're a deep threat, when you shrink the field, it's harder to complete passes. So the advantages of a spread are if you're faster than the other team and have a very good quarterback. That's an advantage of the spread offense. If you're faster than the other team, that's something you want to do. Cloud of dust, if you're bigger than stronger than the other team, you want to do it. Disadvantage, if they're faster than you, then the cloud of dust is probably not going to work so well. The Breakers last year tried to use the cloud of dust against us, and they didn't do very well because we were faster. They had a couple bigger people than us, but we were faster than them, so we would beat them to the point of the block. And by that time, the play was already over. And then they switched to a shotgun spread offense, and we were faster than them, so that really didn't help them at all either. So it really depends on who you're playing and what you have to work with. Some teams you're just going to come against, that's not going to help you at all. I remember when we played Dallas last year, we started off in our regular offense, and we tried to use play-action pass. Unfortunately, our quarterback was off. We couldn't complete a pass to save our life. Eventually, we switched into my spread offense, and we ran all over them. once again, once we got closer to the goal line, it got harder because they are a very disciplined team. So which one's more prevalent in women's football? You'd have to say the cloud of dust. Not too many people run spread, especially the spread offense that you see in college football. Vegas did a very good job at running the spread offense. The first game we played them, they threw the ball over us, all over us. They threw a ton of passes. I think it was 20 of them. But they only completed, I think, four or five. But they had 300 yards passing because, you know, they were just the motion and they got people out of position, and then we were beat. And once we were beat, they were gone. So that was just very rough to play them. And the second time we played them, we were ready for the pass, and they ran all over us. We shifted our defense into, you know, having a free safety over the top so we wouldn't get beat deep, and they recognized it, and they just ran all over us. They had over 250 yards rushing, and it was a very good game and everything, very exciting for the fans. I lost another quart of my hair, but it was a very fun game, and I think Vegas runs a very good spread offense, and obviously they've been doing it for a while because the people that I've talked to said they get better with it every year. They just need to continue to get the athletes to run it, because if they suddenly get a lot of slower, bigger people, they're not going to be able to run the spread offense. You have to have some sort of speed to run that. How do you decide on what to run? I mean, that's basically up to each individual coach, and you have to be smart about it. I understand that coaches come in here with a type of offense and a type of defense that they want to run, and we don't have the recruiting in women's football to do. Let's go out and get the people that we need. Let's go out and get, I want to run a spread offense this year. I need to go recruit fast, athletic people. Well, if you're in that type of area where you can recruit, congratulations. We don't have that opportunity here. We can just basically get the word out to as many people as possible about women's football, and whoever shows up, that's how we have to build our team. You know, this year, the Quake had a ton of people show up. We have a lot of new people, and I'm glad we spent a month on conditioning and basics, because having so many rookies is ridiculous. And every year I hear people say that the interest in women's football is waning, and we have less and less rookies every year. Well, last year I think we had 10 to 12 rookies, and this year we have about 25 to 30 rookies. So that's really, really good, and I'm excited. It's just, you know, we have to teach all the rookies how to learn how to play football, because some of them have watched football, some of them have played flag football, some of them are just like, hey, I want to play football, sounds fun. So learning football and teaching them football, you have to be very patient with, and you have to be very understanding in that they have no clue what you're referring to when you say certain things like zone, man, gap, technique, steps, you know, it's all a different language. It's like learning a new language for them, and you just have to take it slow and hope that they don't get frustrated, because it's all about teaching, and that's one of the reasons why we started a month earlier this year, was to teach. Once we realized, like I was told by management, that it looks like we might have a bunch of rookies this year, so we decided as a coaching staff to have, last year we did January as conditioning month, voluntary, anybody can show up and condition. This year we're like, you know what, practice starts in January, and we are going to start teaching you the basics, because we need to get that done before we start teaching plays, because we can't spend all of February teaching basics and then March going to plays, and then April's boom. So, I mean, we have scrimmages scheduled with the Breakers. Next month we'll have live scrimmages, 11-on-11 pads with the Breakers, possibly the Amazons, and then we also have a round robin tournament on February 24th, I think it is. I'm not really sure what date, but I'm pretty sure it's March 24th. And we've invited like 7 or 8 teams. I know Seattle, the Breakers, the Amazons, Tucson, New Mexico, Modesto, Sacramento, Oakland. All these teams are invited to come and participate in the round robin, and everybody will get to play 4 games, 15 minutes on offense, 15 minutes on defense, no special teams, and just kind of test the rookies out. And I know that the rookie thing is not just my team, because the Amazons have gotten almost 20 rookies, the Breakers have gotten around 20 rookies, Sacramento's gotten about 20 rookies, so it's good. The interest in women's football is growing, and we need to show them, you know, that we know what we're doing as coaches and as organizations. It's very important that we make sure that they enjoy themselves and want to come back for more. And tell their friends about it, because if they have athletic friends, they need to be coming out next year. And, you know, with the growth, we'll eventually be able to take things to the next level, which is major sponsors and TV deals and all that fun stuff. You know, I'm still impressed with the Pittsburgh Passion being on. Every one of their home games is on Fox Sports Pittsburgh. And I know that costs a lot of money, but, I mean, that's exposure. And, you know, you have the DC Divas, who had over 100 people at tryouts and had to cut 35 people because they only carry a 65-man roster. That's amazing. Like, this is the first year I'm ever going to have to tell people they can't dress for a game because they only allow in the IWFL 45 people to dress. I have well more than 45 people on my team that show up, and that's going to be new for me, telling people, hey, sorry, you're not going to be able to dress for this game. I'm not sure how I'm going to deal with that. It's a day-by-day situation and realization that I'm going to have to deal with that eventually. The players know, and once we get pads on, there's going to be a huge separation, as there always is, of who's scared, who's tentative, and who can bring it. That's really going to be the deciding factor. You know, I have four things: playbook knowledge, attitude at practice, your attendance to practice, and your athletic ability. So, and all those weigh differently. And attitude is huge with me. If you're a team player and evoke a very positive and energetic attitude to practice, that's good, because that's the kind of team we need. We need an energetic, high, positive energy around practice. And everybody needs to have fun, because everybody's doing this for free, if not putting out money of their own pocket to play football. So let's talk about the schedules now. The schedules, I will start with the WFA. The schedules from both leagues came out with like a day of each other. So that was pretty weird to me that they came out so close together. Really don't care. But the IWFL season starts April 11th, and the WFA starts April 18th. So IWFL starts 1 week before, and it looks like they end about the same day. So let's start with the WFA. I'm at their website right now. And on April 18th, they have a bunch of games scheduled. Looks like most of the league will be playing. The games that stand out to me are, let's see, we got Austin at Houston, and Houston, of course, is the Cyclones, the defending champions of the now defunct NWFA. So we'll get to see how many people they've returned based on their roster and the game against Austin. I'm not very familiar with Austin, but I'm looking forward to seeing how those two match up, and should tell us a little bit about the former champions. The Dixie Blues travel to the Emerald Coast Barracudas. Now, I am very familiar with the Jacksonville Dixie Blues, as I grew up in St. Augustine. Jacksonville's, you know, 40 minutes north of us. And the Dixie Blues were a powerhouse for many years. It seems as though they've been gone for a year or two. They've recently updated their website to show tryouts. They had tryouts all of January, so I'm guessing practices have started for them. I'm hoping most teams are practicing already with, you know, less than 3 months to go before games start. But the Dixie Blues, and I want to see how much of a comeback they make. If they have Rocky Brown, I mean, I imagine they'll be pretty good, because she is just a man-child. She's a workhorse. It's unbelievable. I mean, she's a very, very good running back. For anybody that's never seen or is in the Southeast, go to one of the Dixie Blue games, no matter where they're playing, if she's playing, because she's a really good running back. And lastly, the first game that I want to see is the California Lynx at the Showgirls. The Lynx and Showgirls, Coach Anthony, I know him. Coach Dion, I know him. Both of them were formerly coached in the IWFL last year. Anthony was with the Breakers, and Dion had his Showgirls in there, and they were real good competition for us. We had two very good games. I'm really going to miss them this year. If we didn't have the Amazons to play, I would really, really be upset about not playing somebody that I know we can compete with on a great basis. But more on that later. The Lynx and Showgirls, I know Coach Barley has his own show, and he's been talking about, you know, Lynx are going to win it all. Because I know that team, and Coach Manny is very close with Coach Anthony, I'm hoping that he gets more players, because I've only heard of him having 16 to 20 people at his practices, and with the bylaw saying that you have to have 30 on your roster, that's you're not going to win anything with 16 to 20 people. And I know I saw pictures from the Showgirls tryouts. Looks like they have a ton of ladies this year, so congratulations, Dion. That's awesome to hear, but I'm looking forward to that result of that game. That's our bye week is actually the next time these two teams play, and I will be at that game at the California Lynx home field. That is going to be on May 16th. That's a bye week for the Quake, and I know that I'm going to encourage all of my players not only to support women's football by attending the game, but go see a local team play, you know, see what type of different style of football that they play, because, you know, you can only keep learning each and every week. So those are the three games I'm really interested in week one, and over the course of the season, I will basically give you my go-to games. Oh, and I know that the ladies at WFB Talk will be doing broadcasts of some games. So always check on those websites to see which one's being broadcast on which site. Of course, I'm on WFBTalkContinues.com, and tonight is not a live show. It is pre-recorded because I am at practice 7-on-7 with the Breakers, a local team with us right now. And now let me switch gears and go over to the IDBFL. IDBFL first week of football. We will start with the battle for New York. We got the New York Sharks playing the New York Nemesis. So the Sharks have been predominantly a really good team through the years. The New York Nemesis is a new team transferring over from the now defunct NWFA and joining the vastly large IDBFL teams, which is ridiculous how many teams we have. And that's good because it's growing. And we can actually they actually created a Tier 1 and Tier 2 that's a little bit more equal than last year. Last year was top-heavy, bottom-light. This year, it seems to be balanced pretty good. Everybody that has, you know, small rosters, small budgets is in Tier 2, and the powerhouses are in Tier 1. Now, yes, there is some cross-play, but that's only going to help the Tier 2 teams realize either how far they have to go, or maybe we should be bumping up to Tier 1 because we can keep up with these people. So the Battle for New York is a big game. The other huge game is the Energy and the Dallas Diamonds, the defending champion Dallas Diamonds, may I say. Who knows who's coming back this year from the Houston Energy? They took a year off. How many defects are they going to have from the Cyclones, because they had several people from the Cyclones on their team. How many people are going to transfer back to Coach Wiggins and Houston Energy? Are they going to be able to reassert themselves against Dallas like the prior year? Dallas was back strong last year. Everybody was reinvested in the new team, in the new league, and they proved it. They proved it by winning the IWFL Championship for 2008. This will be a huge game to let you know who's back for Dallas and how motivated are they to defend that, especially against their cross-state rivals. It's actually not cross-state. It's, you know, down the road a little bit. Houston's the East Coast. Dallas is, you know, center. So I'm really going to be looking forward to hearing about that game, and as it finishes probably a couple hours before mine, which is my third game, very important game. The Amazons and the Quake. Both teams are defending something. The Amazons are two-time defending division leaders of their leagues, WPFL and NWFA. They've won their divisions the last 2 years. The California Quake are the defending champions of the IWFL division that the Amazons joined. So a lot of bragging rights, and especially bragging rights in LA, because the California Quake home field is in Downey, which is in Los Angeles County. Los Angeles Amazons play in downtown L.A. So this is not only going to be a huge rivalry, as Duncan and I are not so much friends, I would say, but we're close. We respect each other. We talk a lot about football, about our teams, and both of us expect the best out of our teams. You know, we've been coaching for the same amount of time in women's football. We both started in 2002, him with the Amazons and me with the Long Beach Aftershock. And we've always been able to talk about our teams and how we're doing and where we're going. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to playing him this year. I was very excited to hear that they joined the league, and it should be a couple great games. So if you're in the L.A. area and you want to see some good football, the Amazon in Quake should be able to provide you with that. That these games, we have Oakland and we also have Sacramento in our division, so I think it's a safe bet to say we probably have the hardest division in all of the IWFL, and that's no disrespect to all the other divisions. Please don't take it as that. We have, let's see, the Pacific Southwest. Sacramento has three titles. The Quake have a title. The Oakland Banshees have never been a joke. And the Amazons have a couple of division titles to their thing. So we have three teams that are formerly women's football champions, and two teams that are women's football champions, and three teams that are formerly division winners. Plus you have the Oakland Banshees, who have always been like one game away from winning the division, but they have been to the playoffs. So, I mean, that's a really big division right there. I mean, the North Atlantic is good with the Sharks, the Firebirds, you know, the Mid-Atlantic with the Divas, the Demolition, and the Passion. Very good division. Very, very good division. And then you have, you know, the Atlantic Explosion, Dallas Diamonds, and Houston Energy. Another great division. So Tier 1 is stacked with very, very good teams. And I cannot wait to see the football played in the IWFL this year. With that being said, let's go into some things that I posted for my discussions. And this is going to suck because of it not being a live show, that a lot of you can't put your input into what I've said. I put on there, stop all the talk about leagues playing each other. It's not going to happen this year. Let's focus on your team, your season, your league. That was not meant to cause arguments. That was meant to get people to focus on where their focus should be. Yes, women's football is divided. Yes, there are two leagues. Yes, they are competing for everything. Whatever league you're in, worry about your stuff. Don't worry about what the other league is doing, the other teams are doing, other coaches are doing. If you're doing that, you're not providing the focus and the drive to your team that you should be doing. It's just ridiculous. I mean, I don't care what other teams and other leagues are doing. I don't really care if I play them, because my focus is on my team, teaching them the plays, the schemes, and trying to get them ready for the teams that I will play that have an effect on me going to the playoffs and winning a championship. All right? The other teams and the other leagues, they have absolutely no effect to what I do. Now, people could say, well, you're not a true champion if you win the division unless you play us. Well, I don't know what world you come from, but if I win a championship, or whoever wins a championship in the IWFL, guess what? They're champions of women's football in the IWFL. And then the WFA, they'll have their champion. And eventually down the road, you may see, you know, that those two champions play each other, sort of like the AFL, NFL did in the NFL. You know how many years that took for that to happen? A long, long time. I mean, there were NFL, AFL champions in the 40s and 50s. The first Super Bowl wasn't until the 60s, folks. So that's 20-some years. 20-some years that it took for them to get it. This is my 8th season coaching and 7th year total. You know, in 2002, women's football has been around since this go-round, 99. So if we got 20 years, guess what? We're getting pretty close, but we're not close yet. All right, we're about halfway there, and that's what you need to realize. We're still working to create the best product on the field possible, and that is up to the coaches and management to provide that to the players. We have to teach them well, teach them how to play a specific brand of football, whatever that may be, and then, you know, not worry about all the politics of everything. If that's what you're focused on, you need to get into the management of the leagues and try and work something out there. But as a coach, as management of your team, that's where your focus should be. That's all I meant with that. I didn't mean the fact that I'm trying to say one league is better than the other, which I believe the IWFL is better than the WFA, because guess what? The WFA hasn't even played a game yet. They've made tons of promises, and they haven't done anything yet. They have an opportunity to be a really good league if they can live up to their promises. I give no doubt to that. If they can live up to their promises, they will earn a lot of respect in women's football. But yeah, right now, they haven't done anything. The IWFL has been around since 2002, I think, and now they are the longest-standing women's football league. WPFL, gone. NWFA, gone. The WAFL, gone. The WAFC, gone. All these leagues come and go. The IWFL has been here. And look at the – did you hear some of the teams I named? New York Sharks, been around forever. DC Divas, Pittsburgh Passion, Detroit Demolition, Atlanta Explosion, Dallas Diamonds, Houston Energy, Minnesota Vixen, an original team, Chicago Force, Amazons, Quake, the first winner of the whole women's football thing, Sacramento Sirens, three times, Seattle Majestics, and that's just Tier 1. Let's go to Tier 2. We have the Orlando Mayhem. We have the New England Intensity. We have the Clarksville Fox, which is proving to be a very well-run organization. And we have some new teams, the Louisville Nightmare, Tennessee Valley Tigers, Chattanooga Locomotion. You know, we have a grip of teams that are huge. And the WFA, they have a grip of teams, too. They do have a grip of teams. But I just don't think it matches up with who the IWFL is bringing. I mean, the Dixie Blues, they played the Quake for that first championship. That's a big team right there. Then we have, let's see, the Philadelphia Liberty Bells. That's another team right there that's been around for a while. It's taken a couple years off, but it's back. Then the St. Louis Slam has always been a very good team. H-Town Texas Cyclones, which is referred to as the Houston Cyclones, they are a defending champion. Then you have the Cincinnati Sizzle, which brings NFL clout with Icky Woods. The Showgirls are a very good team. The Empire State Roar was a very good team, yet they are not playing this year. And then you have the Phoenix Prowlers, which to me is a reincarnation of the Arizona Caliente. For those of you unfamiliar with Arizona Caliente, they were a very good team that couldn't get past the Quake when the Quake were really good, and then they had to deal with Sacramento in their heyday. They were always playing second fiddle to one of those two teams. And I heard that they got their original coach back. So right there, that is kind of crazy to me because that coach is really good. And where is he? Coach Turley. Coach Turley is a very good offensive coach. So the Lynx and the Showgirls have something to deal with when they play the Phoenix Prowlers, because the Phoenix Prowlers have always been good, and yes, the Amazons did beat them a lot last year. But Turley wasn't there, and I have a lot of respect for Turley, and I know that my sister, A-Train, used to play against him all the time, and he would basically talk to her and say, hey, listen, we know exactly what you're going to do. He helped her become a better running back, and he was an opposing coach. That means he's a very, very good coach. And he's also not in it for glory. He's in it to make better football players out of women. So that's something that I've always been pretty impressed with him. So I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. Let's see if there's been any updates on the recruiting schedules for the teams. Once again, I want to thank everybody for listening and that, you know, keep your focus on your team. You know, make your team the best it can be. That's going to be the most you can do this year to help further women's football. Put on a good show that'll keep people coming back to watch the games, because that's what it's about. That's what it's about. There's been no major changes in the recruiting, no major announcements, so we'll leave that at that. Thank you for everybody listening. This has been Coach Penn, Third and Long. I'm going to go back and finish up now at the 7-on-7 with the Breakers. It should be pretty exciting. We're doing another one on February 18th, which should be my next show. So my next show might be recorded, or I might change the date. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to talk with BJ. BJ, thanks for running the tape. Once again, I do apologize for being live, but my team comes first before the show. She knows that, but I did take the time out during the day to record everything I wanted to say. I'm sure I missed some things. You can always email me at headcoach@californiaquake.com with ideas or complaints. I have gotten a couple complaints, so don't think that I'm offended. I like getting the attitudes. I mean, Coach Bartley actually complained to me, sent me a really long email saying some things. He said I could read it on the show. No reason to. I'm not into that. I understood what he said. I just didn't agree with it, and he didn't agree with me, and we're okay with disagreeing. So doesn't matter if it's good or bad. Send me your thoughts. I will take them into consideration. I love getting outside opinions. This show is my opinions. It's not anybody else's. It's what I think will help further the sport and give you some information. So everybody have a great Wednesday night. Thanks once again for listening, and this has been a pre-recorded session of Third and Long with Coach Ben. Good night.